Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football. On the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network, in conjunction with Swick Enterprises. We're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 140-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. We're sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards, one of the largest selections of vintage football cards and memorabilia on the web. Check out their website at msbsportscards.com. And we're also sponsored in part by BST Auctions. Check out their upcoming incredible fall auction at their website at bstauctions.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, who's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Rick Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe! Welcome to the show this evening.
Ah, Captain, it's so good to be back, sir. So good to be back.
You were on a
listening
hiatus.
To the show you did last week with, listening to the show you did last week with John, and it was just awkward for me to be listening in on someone else talking to the captain. That wasn't me. It was just, so I'm back.
Right.
I'm feeling a little like a jilted lover, but I'm doing okay. I'll get over it, Captain.
Unfortunately, Joe, sometimes that happens. But without further ado, I want to get right into our pregame talk here. And we are going to talk about an incredible, rare piece of vintage football cards. And we're going to talk a little bit about the 1946 Sears and Roebuck uncut sheet of the Cleveland Browns that has a beautiful Otto Graham pre-rookie card on it. Joe, I'm going to hand off to you, and I'm going to let you take it from there.
Yeah, beautiful set. You and I, as the listeners know, we pick topics, before each show, and it's always fun to pick a topic. There are so many old, rare sets out there to choose from, and we're trying to pick them off one at a time. It's just sets, rare sets, et cetera. The 46 Sears set's just one of my favorites. I absolutely love it. Part of the reason, that I'm drawn to it is just so many pre-Hall of Fame rookie cards. And a little bit of background, 1946, Sears and Roebuck, a small company, in the Cleveland area. The Cleveland Browns won the championship, and Sears commemorated that with an eight known cards. Let's put the asterisk there. We'll get to that later. Of some of the players. Cards are a little bit larger. How big were they? They're like, 2x4, roughly. And featured eight players, three of them Hall of Famers. The set comes out in 1946. Those three Hall of Famers, Dante Lavelli, Frank Gatzke, and the great Otto Graham, predate their Hall of Fame rookie cards, 1950 Bowman, by 4 years. So, I'm actually very curious. It's a mainstream but local set. I'm actually very curious why those aren't considered Hall of Fame rookie cards. You know, I consider the 46 Sears card to be Otto Graham's rookie card. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's the known, for lack of a better term, prejudice in the hobby that most Hall of Fame, most rookie cards are being defined by their mainstream sets being
mainstream.
You know, Bowman,
yeah.
Topps, Fleer,
nationally.
Philadelphia. So, and I think that's why a lot of these more unusual oddball sets are truly overlooked, to say the least, with regards to, you know, the value, the rarity, so on and so forth of all these different types of sets. Now, as far as I'm concerned, and I know we've talked about this in the past years ago, that the Otto Graham 46 Sears and Roebuck card is truly rare, truly unique, and at the same time, I do agree with you. I would say that could be classified as his rookie card. Now, again, I'm not up on the PSA
definition.
Yeah. And as far as looking at it for the value of a actual rookie card, so on and so forth, so I can see why both the major grading sites shy away from it and the registry sites shy away from it at the same time. And again, it is a brutal set to collect. And I know we've had this conversation in the past also. How many are actually in existence? 10? You know, 15? Who knows? That type of situation. Because,
registry. Your show, Captain. PSA registry listed as less than a dozen.
Okay.
The Otto Graham is the most populous. So, I mean, it would definitely be a roadblock, be an obstacle if you're a Hall of Fame rookie card collector. And, you know, if they used, and PSA tries not to have regional sets as,
right,
you know, anchoring. So, I mean, I can see why. And then you can get in, you can see, like I said, the stuck would be, if there, you know, there's 150 people collecting the Hall of Fame rookie card set. If there's a dozen of these cards out there, suddenly there's only 12 people who can, you know, complete, you know, the set because of the rarity of these, you know. But,
all right, so I'll throw this right to you, because you're more into registry than I am, and you know me, I'm not big on graded at all. Does that help the hobby or does that hurt the hobby, in your opinion?
Pertaining to what? To not use the Sears, the 46 Sears for the rookie card?
Yeah, and at the same time, does it turn off any possible new collector to say, gee, I'm gonna, you know, create this Hall of Fame rookie set, but I know already there's probably 15, 20 cards in that series I'll never collect because there's so few of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
so again,
I've assembled the Hall of Fame rookie card set before, and it would definitely be a turnoff if there were certain regional sets that,
mm-hmm,
I, you know, were simply not collectible. If the Grange rookie card was the, you know, the 26 Spalding, you know, miscut advertisement, you know, there's less than four of those, you know, if that was his rookie card, that'd be a major turnoff. So, you know, PSA is in business to, you know, put plastic tombs around cards. And if people are collecting the sets, then they'll do it. So, I can see why it's not the Hall of Fame rookie card set. But to people like me, I look at a set like this, and not only is it regional, you know, from Cleveland, but they're just amazing headshots of great football cards. And to be honest, I collect this set. You mentioned, you know, there's an uncut sheet. What really started this conversation was me texting you a picture of an uncut sheet I had. I was pulling some stuff out, you know, going through the man cave, looking around, and I collect uncut sheets. And one of my favorite, mm-hmm, uncut sheets is this 1946 8-card uncut sheet I have of this set. It's one of the only ones I've ever seen, and I'm very, very proud to have it in my set. And I took a picture of it and texted it to you, and then we started a conversation, and, you know, it's like, all right, let's talk about that in the next Gridiron Greats. But I look at that sheet, and it's one of the favorite things in my collection. It's just, it's rare. Sheets can't get trimmed or retouched or anything like that. You can't, you know, that's why I love collecting, you know, sheets. But I look at the autogram card of this. It predates his rookie card by 4 years. At some point, I don't care what the overlords at PSA say his rookie card is. This is his rookie card to me, and I happily collect it. And I've always loved regional stuff like this. You know, the Seahawks have a 1976 Fred Meyer issue, and they have one of Steve Largent. I collect that. I love it. You know, it's
You're looking at these regional sets, and anybody who knows me knows I have a very strong love for regional oddball insert types of sets. And to me, there are so many real neat historical oddball sets out there that can be collected. And again, I collected, you know, from many years ago, whatever was inside the pack, I kept. So if it wasn't a regular card, and I always use the example, first cards I ever opened were 65 tall boys. I open up the pack.
Yep.
I distinctly remember those rub-offs of the different college teams and the AFL teams. I did rub some off. I do confess to that because I didn't know what else you did with them. They looked cool on paper type of thing. And I didn't realize until many years later what I – collectible those inserts were. And the other example I give, 1964 Topps pennant inserts, which were basically AFL teams and some college teams also. Very, very difficult insert to collect. Can't really grade them because they came folded in the pack in 64. Well, really dating myself, I think it has to have been probably a year or two after.
That ship has sailed, Captain. That ship has sailed, dating yourself, sir.
65, 66, 67, somewhere along that line, I distinctly remember I used to go to this little candy shop in the town next to where I lived. It was called Branford Candy Store. I'll never forget it. My father knew the owner pretty well, so the guy, I would go in there once a week with my nickel or diamond, buy whatever. So I remember him telling us that he had – last year's or a couple years ago packs he found in the back room. He had one or two packs of the 64 Topps football cards because he knew I only bought the football. So I said, okay, I'll buy them. They were a nickel each. And I distinctly remember opening the packs. The one thing I remember more than anything else were the pennants inside. And I tried to figure out what do you do with the pennant. And I remember I cut a piece of cardboard out. I trimmed the pennant. The white backing of the pennant, and then I stuck it on the piece of cardboard, and I said, well, this is cool. I got it on a little piece of cardboard, and I still have those in my collection. And I counted as part of my 64 Topps pennant. Now, I know the football purists would deny my 64 pennants. They would say that they are, you know, they are mishandled, they're on cardboard, they are not pure out of the pack. Well, I still, over the years, I collected a lot of them, you know, with the white backing on them. But I always said to myself, I better keep these are cool. I remember these when I was a kid. And I distinctly remember cutting the cardboard out and putting the sticker on it, putting the pennant sticker on it.
By the way, Captain, who gives a crap at some point, why are we collecting these pictures of men in tights on cardboard? I mean, we're collecting it because it harkens us back to our childhood. I mean, you're talking about plunking or, you know, going and buying a pack. And in my mind flashes up a very young, you know, ambassador of football, a mustachioed 7-year-old walking in, plunking his nickel down. Because I can't imagine you without a mustache, Bob. So when I think of you as 7, I still think of you as a big mustache. So it's 7-year-old with a mustache walking in, plunking his nickel down and grabbing some wax pack. That is a vision. You know, that's a vision that pops into my mind. So, I mean, who cares what you did with the pennants? It's your memory. It's your set.
Yeah. And then it's the same thing when in 68 with the Topps posters, I used to pin them on my wall. I had any posters I got out of the packs, I would either tape them or put little thumbtack thumbtacks for them and hang them up on my wall. And I used to look at them that way.
Yep.
You know, what'd you do with them? Yeah. Was I supposed to hermetically seal them back in 1968, knowing they'll be worth a couple $1 million back, you know, 40 years later? No, I'm not going to do something like that. I mean, that's not the purpose of, you know, nickel or dime pack back then. It just blows my mind.
We would have known.
If we would have known,
think about how rich you'd be if you would have taken boxes of 65 Topps tall boys
and just put them away.
I mean, a pack now is not worth a nickel. It's worth $4,000 or $5,000.
I know. Well, I'll tell you, I can confess to this. Back in 69 during the winter. Again, the candy shop. He was again cleaning out stuff. His store was a mess. He had stuff everywhere. He had like newspapers, magazines, candy, all that kind of stuff. So, anyways, I distinctly remember it was like in the winter, probably January, February. It had been snowing outside. I trudge in there with my father. My father used to buy the paper. And bought his cigarettes from the guy. And he said to me, I got in the back, but he said, I know you don't have enough money for it. So my father said, well, how much is it? So he said, 50 cents. He said, I got 10 packs from 1967, the Topps cards. And those had the crazy pennants inside of them. So I bought all 10 packs. I opened them up immediately that afternoon. It was a Saturday. And I remember a lot of those stickers I used to peel off and put them on my binder for school, and I would just look at them during the day. That was the other thing. So I ruined a couple $1 million worth of 67 PSA 11 crazy pennants there. So,
no kidding.
It is what it is.
But
it is.
But
know.
I love this.
Again,
I love this Cleveland set. Oh, yeah. On the front, for example, I'm looking at an autogram quarterback. It says the name. It's a nice headshot of each team, and the headshot of each player is what appeared in the in the Cleveland Brown program quarterback. And then it says the same thing on each card: follow the Browns at home and away with Bob Neal over WGAR 1220 on your dial, brought to you by Sears Roebuck and Company, 7 stores in the greater Cleveland. And on the flip side, it listed their 14 game schedule that week, or that season. Not sure how you got them. I would imagine, they're regional. They're through the Sears. I would imagine you walked into Sears and you bought something. And if you asked for it or if you bought something sports-related, perhaps, they handed you a card and you collected it. So, it's I would imagine it's, it's kind of like the Rogers Pete. There was some sort of redemption or, who knows. But obviously they were promotional. They were trying to get you to tune in. But who knows? But nobody knows how they're handed out.
And a lot of people don't realize that there were a lot of these different types of promotions for football cards, photos, stuff like that. And a lot of them are exceptionally rare. I mean, you just don't see them anywhere. And when they do come up, they're very valuable. But that's an incredible piece that you got in your collection.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Kevin.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm not sure if you remember this, but like 4 years ago, somebody on Net 54, I had to look this up, but I remember about 4 years ago, somebody on Net 54 said they found a ninth card. John Yarniker, who was an end, and they posted this picture up. They're like, hey, I picked this up. They did some high-resolution scans, and what was determined was somebody, had the same saying, the Sears Roebuck, listen in on, tune in on this, and the same schedule on the back. But the dot matrix was a little different. There was some bleed over. Font was slightly different. The union print stamp on the front was different. And what was determined was somebody had taken a photo of John Yarniker and kind of made it into a card. There's hypotheticals.
Right.
Perhaps there were more people. I mean, in the set, Marion Motley's missing. Willis, Lou the Toe Groza's missing. So there's definitely some other Hall of Famers they could have made another sheet out of, but if you think later, none of them turned up.
I always believe that set especially, they probably had a limited run. It was the first year for the AAFC. Nobody knew if it was going to run or not, so they probably wanted to make sure they didn't get stuck with thousands of sheets that they're going to end up throwing out.
Yes.
So they figured, they probably asked Paul Brown, who are your best players? We're going to use them. And just leave it like that, and that's what they did, I bet.
Yeah, If you look at the schedule on the flip side, you know, two of the teams on the schedule didn't make it. The Miami yep. Seahawks, of all things, was their season opener. Yep. I mean, so you look at a couple of those. Yeah, they, you know, most of the teams in the AFC didn't make it one, you know, or the entire, you know, time for the AFC.
4 year history. Yeah.
Yeah. Love the set. I'm very proud. Very proud to own that uncut sheet of the 46 years. It's one of the favorite things in my collection.
Great. Great. All right, we're going to move on to the show because our special guest is waiting. I'd like to welcome him to our show today. He's a well-known author who has penned Pro Football's Most Passionate Fans. He has his own website, Harvard Avenue. He's also a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats magazine, and he's a fan of all sports from Pittsburgh, especially his beloved Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a guest of our show back in May of 2012, 6 years ago, and I'd like to welcome to our show Mr. Harv Aronson. Harv, welcome to the show.
Captain Joe, good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
Good. I'm glad to be on the show.
Harv, it seems like I talk to you all the time, but only via email, so it's nice to talk to you in person again, or on the phone again, actually hear a human voice. It was interesting.
Yeah, hopefully we'll meet in person.
It was interesting, a new subscriber who's not really new to Gridiron Greats magazine said, you know, I read so much online, it's just nice to get a physical copy of the magazine in my hand and look at it. And I'm the opposite all the time because I prefer paper. I'm not big on reading everything online. I'm just getting tired of it. I'd rather have a book or a magazine or a newspaper in my hands. Yes, I still buy the daily paper here locally. And, you know, read my news that way, where I buy my coffee and my paper in the morning before I go to work. So, Harv, let me start off by asking, how did you become a fan of the Steelers and of all Pittsburgh sports teams?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was 12 years old, it was 1971, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. My father was watching the World Series on television. I walked into the room to see what he was watching, and I just happened to walk in at the time that Roberto Clemente, the late, great Roberto Clemente, was hitting a home run in that seventh game of the World Series. And instantly I became a fan of baseball, and Roberto Clemente became my hero. And, you know, I became a fan on that day. And it's ironic that the same year was the Immaculate Reception of Franco Harris's catch. And at the time, they didn't have the local broadcast available unless the game was sold out. So that game was not on television in Pittsburgh, and I can remember it as clear as day.
Wow.
Standing out in front of my house on the street using a little AM radio listening to the game. And, I mean, it was as exciting as being there at the stadium as it was listening to it on the radio. And from that point on, I became a diehard Steelers fan, all Pittsburgh sports fan. And, unfortunately, I also remember the day that Roberto died and learning from somebody in my house coming down the stairs and saying, did you hear what happened? And I said, no. They said, Roberto Clemente's been killed in a plane crash. And, I mean, to this day, it just seems like it's not believable. I mean, he was such
a
hero and an icon in Pittsburgh. You know, fans of the Pirates just find it hard to believe this many years later, the man is not with us anymore. It's just, it's incredible. But since that day, I became a diehard Pittsburgh sports fan and been following them ever since.
That's amazing. You know, it's funny when you talk about radio. I teach one night a week, so and it's normally Monday nights. So I'm driving home from school. It's about 9:30 at night. So Monday Night Football is on some sports station. So I find the station. I listen to it for about a half hour. And it's just nice to me to listen to the game on the radio again, because you really got to think about, you really have to listen to what the announcer is saying to recreate what's going on in the field so you can really picture what's going on. And to me, it gives so much more of a flavor of the game than what we have today, where we have to have the game and then we have 100 commercials and then we have 50 replays of the same play over and over again. And then we have another set of plays, and we have another 100 commercials, so on and so forth. So, to me, the whole pattern.
Bob,
of the
don't
game
forget the rough. Bob, don't forget the roughing the passer penalty in there.
Right, right. And don't hit the quarterback. Don't tackle him. Touch him. you know, that type of thing. And again, it just takes away so much from the game, and that's why I still enjoy, even though the commercials are in, I could always pop the station, put something else on, and then I know 2 minutes later to put the game back on. You know what I mean? So I do distinctly appreciate. I do appreciate when you said you listen to it on an AM radio, because I can picture myself in my room looking at my posters, the frauded on the wall there, and listening on my AM radio also to whatever game was on, whatever time it was, you know, in whatever season it was, whether it's, you know, baseball, hockey, basketball, football, and to really date myself, listening to Continental Football on the big 50,000-watt station out of Hartford, WTIC, which was usually on Friday or Saturday nights. So, wow, that's a great memory to hear.
Well, as the captain knows, I'm a specialist in sports history. That's what I love. And it's definitely a lost art. And I can tell you, when I was growing up listening to Bob Prince, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bob Prince or not, but he was the Pirates radio announcer. And he was just such an enjoyment to listen to. He was so much fun to listen to. And I would have preferred to listen to him on the radio than as opposed to watching on television, because he just had an art of broadcasting baseball.
Yeah.
Well, Harv, I'm not sure if you know my background. I'm a diehard Seahawk fan, you know, born and raised up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I don't really harbor any ill will, you know, from the stolen Super Bowl championship against the Seahawks in 2005. Just wanted to go a little off script here. I put together a little pop quiz for you, and I was just curious. I wanted to get your input here. So I'm going to throw up an A or B choice.
Before you get to that, I do know Mr. and Mrs. Seahawk personally, by the way.
Oh, what do you mean? What do you mean, Mr. Seahawk?
Mr. and Mrs. Seahawk, the ones with the funny hair that come to all the games.
Oh, geez.
I'm sure you've seen them.
Yes, I have.
Their husband and wife.
Yeah. So just quick, just an A or B choice, and just shout your answer out, and then I'll let you know whether you're right or wrong. All right, ready? First question. Who's the better mascot here? Terrible Towel or 12th Man?
Terrible Towel.
Hey, that's not correct. That's not correct, Harv. Sorry.
The reason I say that, Joe, is because the Terrible Towel, when it started, now if you look around stadiums, everybody's got a towel. We were the inception of that idea of waving towels.
Yeah, that's a lovely story, Harv. All right, question number two. The Steel Curtain or the Legion of Boom?
Oh, the Steel Curtain, hands down. Those four or five guys were the best ever. Joe Green, I mean, he's one of the best defensive players in history, without a doubt. And L.C. Greenwood actually does not get his due. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. And Dwight White is a great player. Ernie Holmes was off his rocker, but he was a good player.
Sorry to say, Harv, the correct answer there was Legion of Boom.
I would expect
All right. Third question, Chuck Knoll or Chuck Knox?
Oh, come on. Chuck Knoll's one of the greatest coaches ever. Although he did have a lot of talent.
And I hate to say I agree with you on that one. So.
I wish Chuck Knoll was the coach right now, because this defense is pathetic, if you saw last night.
So, yeah, I did. Yes, they pretty porous there in the fourth quarter, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm real disappointed right now.
Yeah. All right, on to my serious scripted question. I like going off the off the script on occasion.
Oh, that was fun.
Obviously, you're a Steeler fan. You collect Steeler items, I would assume. You're a collector. What do you got in your collection? What cool Steeler items you got?
Well, over the years, you know, I've collected cards like anybody else. I've collected a lot of books and programs, specialized in that stuff. You know, I'm interested in historical stuff. So, you know, one of my prized possessions, I guess, would be after they imploded Three Rivers Stadium, I went after a seat back from the stadium and was able to obtain one. And I was also able to obtain a piece of the artificial turf. So I kept that around because that brings back, you know, a lot of memories since I was in that stadium so many times. And, you know, you just have to look at those things and, you know, you can call back so many memories from that. And I actually was not in Pennsylvania at the time they imploded it. I wanted to go down for the implosion. And I think one of the sad things that I saw was when I went back to watch the videos of them imploding it, you had people cheering it. And that I just couldn't understand. You know, there should have been no cheering in the implosion of that stadium because when that goes down, memories go down with it. So I didn't quite understand that. But then again, it was a lot of younger people watching it, so they didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know, Harv. I you know, watching stuff in the Kingdome and when they blew the Kingdome up, I mean, I went up there and cheered. I don't remember if I cheered. I just remember there was a little bit of applause. I don't think it was people applauding for, you know, goodbye Kingdome. I think it was more, you know, hello, new era. I don't know. I never really thought about that until you brought it up. But, you know, that's an interesting, you know, interesting thing to ponder.
Well, I mean, there's two sides to it because in place of that, now you have Heinz Field, which is a beautiful stadium. It's open-end stadium. You can see downtown Pittsburgh. So, I mean, there's a plus to it. And in reality, while Three River Stadium had a lot of memories, the fact is I never really liked that stadium because, to me, it was just a cement bowl. And, you know, there was no architecture to it, no nice design to it. It was just a cement bowl. But, you know, like I said, the memories were there. So, you know, I can recall so many times I've been there, so many different games. And as a matter of fact, going right real quick back to the Immaculate Reception, there's another funny story, too. My father was actually at that game, and I remember him coming home and telling me that everybody thought the game was over when that last possession happened. So everybody was just kind of relaxed. In fact, I don't know if you know the story, but Art Rooney was actually on his way back to the locker room to congratulate his players on a good season. He didn't think that they were going to win the game either. But my father told me the guy in front of him was eating some chicken or whatever, and when Franco caught the ball and took off, this guy was so excited, he threw his chicken up in the air and kind of landed all over my father standing behind him. But it was something. And, you know, Terry Bradshaw says he didn't see the play either because he was on his back, and Art Rooney just heard this roar and had no idea what was going on. And it was just, it's incredible. It was an incredible moment.
Wow.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
The Immaculate Reception. I loved seeing Franco's interview where he's like, you know, somebody was talking about Hall of Fame. He's like, do you know Franco? Can you explain, you know, why you should be in the Hall of Fame or something like that? And he's like, well, duh, the Immaculate Reception. Just kind of funny.
And the other funny part of that story is John Frenchie Fuqua, who was actually the intended receiver on that play, the controversy still exists today that whether the ball hit him or hit Jack Tatum. And, of course, all the Raiders are going to say that it hit Frenchie Fuqua, which would have made it an illegal pass at the time because, you know, an offensive player can't touch the ball on a reception if it's on a deflection. So John Frenchie Fuqua, he gets hit with that question a million times a year, and he says, you know, I'm not going to answer it. I'm taking it to my grave with me. So we'll never know. I mean, you can only watch replay and make a judgment for yourself.
Yeah.
That's just to me such a pure part of football history. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. To have actually been there at that stadium to see it had to have been incredible at the same time too. However, I'm just curious, a little off script. What's your oldest? Do you have really any old Steeler programs like from the '60s or '50s or?
I think the first one I picked up at a flea market or something. I think it was 1967. I think that's the earliest one.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. And I think it was a Dallas Steelers game program, 1967.
Okay. Very interesting. Harv, tell us about your website, Harvard Avenue. I looked and I poked around it the other day. Looks very interesting. Mm-hmm. Tell our audience about it.
Okay, well, Harvard Avenue is my own personal website where I write about, of course, the Steelers and all Pittsburgh sports. And there's other sports just that interest me as well on there. I'm a big MMA and UFC fan, so I cover that a little bit. But the focus is on Pittsburgh sports. And I've actually been writing websites for quite a while. I had an original Steelers-only website back in the 1990s, and it was called Steelers Hotline. And I ran that for about 15 years, and then I put it into retirement for a little bit. And then a few years ago, I decided to bring up another website. And originally, it was called Allberg Sports. And then I changed it just about a year ago or earlier this year to Harvard Avenue. And I chose that name basically because with the name Harv, I used to get called Harvard a lot. So I thought it would be kind of catchy to make it Harvard Avenue. So it's Harvard Avenue Sports. And, of course, it's www.harvard-avenue.com.
That's an interesting website. I do recommend our listeners to check it out. And it's very well done, and it's a lot of information there at the same time. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. What is Harvard Avenue, by the way, Harv?
Well, it's just, here's the ironic thing. It's funny. It was a suggestion from my wife that I name it Harvard because I used to be called Harvard by so many people. They give me weird nicknames, you know. But for a while there, we were living on a street called Harvard Avenue, so it's kind of weird that we moved into a street that had the same name as the website. But it just stems from my name.
I wasn't sure if, Three River Stadium was on Harvard Avenue or something like that.
Nothing like that. But I just thought it was kind of catchy, you know. It might catch people's attention, and then when they get there, they can, you know, venture around. And, you know, of course, I cover, like I said, all Pittsburgh sports, but history is my biggest hobby. I love sports history, so every once in a while I'll throw some historical story on there. And as you know, for Gridiron Greats, I'm always writing about something historical, which I love to do. So.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was enjoying reading your articles. I mean, they're very Steeler-centric, you know, so I have to, you know, kind of take a deep breath before I start digging in, but, you know.
Well, I think the latest one Bob had me write was for all other Pittsburgh sports, and it's just for me, you know, I always say it to lots of different people that it's not the same watching sports today as it was 30, say 40, 50 years ago, and I only wish that it was similar to that now as it opposed to, you know, what it was then, because what it was then is so much more enjoyable to watch than it is today. And, I mean, the perfect example is this Le'Veon Bell situation that's going on with the Steelers, which I find ridiculous.
Yes. I mean, and we were joking around about roughing the passer, making time at the program for roughing the passer penalties, but it's become ridiculous. It's really becoming a turnoff to fans. Enough penalties, you know.
Uh-huh. And I don't know if you saw the Kansas City Steelers game, but there was 5 roughing the passer penalties in one game in that game, and some of them were just ridiculous.
Wow.
I only watched the fourth quarter. I was doing something, but, yeah, it's getting bad.
We were watching here on the East Coast. They had the 49ers and Chargers on the CBS network, and they were so trying just to focus on the field, and a few times the camera went up to the stands. If they had 10,000 physical people there, that was a lot. You know what I mean? So I'm saying to myself, you know, they're killing themselves this year. Like, once again, you know, there's some serious issues on the field which are carrying over to the fan base, and the fans are saying, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just utterly ridiculous to watch.
Actually,
it's funny
story
because
Go ahead, Jeff.
Go ahead, Harv. No, you start.
I was going to say, I wrote an article on this penalty thing last week, and I said if Jack Lambert were playing today, he would have been thrown out of football. And then I put a video of the famous quote he had with Howard Cosell, who asked him about the tightening of rules for quarterbacks, and he said, well, maybe they should put skirts on all the quarterbacks. And, I mean, he just would not have tolerated this. You know, he was aggressive. He played hard, and that's the way the game was supposed to be played. I just don't understand how they expect these guys to be rushing a quarterback and to let up. And this body weight issue
at full speed.
Is a penalty.
Yep.
The body weight issue is just a joke, because if you're tackling the quarterback, how are you supposed to prevent your body weight from falling on the guy? I mean,
especially if you're putting your shoulder in his numbers. It's it's nice because I started, you know, assistant coaching my son's fourth grade football team. And, so I'm on the sidelines, and I'm typically standing behind the sideline ref, watching the scrimmage, go. And it was kind of cool because, last Saturday's game, there was a receiver who was lined up offsides. And the ref's like, for the other team. And the ref's like, number 26, slide back. And the kid didn't hear him, and the play started off. The kid was offsides, and the ref didn't throw the penalty. And I tapped him on the shoulder, like, nice job, man. I mean, nice job. The people don't come here to see a fourth grader get called for lining up in the neutral zone, on the flank out. And I liked it.
Wow.
I really liked it. It's getting ridiculous. I told Bob, I'm like, I'm gonna beat the NFL to it. I'm gonna start a two-hand touch league, professional league.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time my league is up and running, the NFL will have migrated to two-hand touch, but I'll have the advantage. I'll have already, established dominance in the area.
It's interesting you say that, because I also put another quote from Ronnie Lott, because you guys probably well remember when he injured his finger and he decided to amputate his finger so he could play.
Yeah.
And he was mentioning how he knew guys that played with injuries, like Jack Youngblood, which I remember in Super Bowl 14, he had a broken leg and he played anyway. And I mentioned that today these guys will break a fingernail and they're like, they're sidelining themselves. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever told you this, Bob, but the first game I ever saw was Super Bowl Steelers and Cowboys. And
wow.
I remember my dad was watching it. My dad was watching. I'm probably six. So I don't even know what Super Bowl it was, but Cowboys and Steelers. And just went out. Super Bowl 10, yeah. So what year was that? It would have been
76.
77, yeah. So I'm 7 years old. Yeah, that jives. But, yeah, the first game I saw, a Super Bowl, and just my parents watching it. I came out and sat on the couch and, that's it. And here I am. So it's very nostalgic. So, I mean, I trust me, there's history in the Steelers and the Cowboys rivalry like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the most memorable plays was Cliff Harris patting Roy Drill on the helmet after a missed field goal and Jack Lambert running over him, picking him up and throwing him on the turf. I mean, that's classic. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen that, you got to Google it and watch that, because it's hilarious.
So, Harv, tell us about some books you've written, articles, et cetera, of the past. I mean, obviously, you write for Gridiron Greats. You're a co-senior contributing writer. Nice to have another one here joining me. But, tell us about some of the books and articles you've written.
Well, you had mentioned Pro Football's Most Passionate Fans, and I did that writing a few years back. It was 2012, actually. And it's still available, actually, on Amazon. And Pro Football's Most Passionate Fans came from the fact that I had won an award in 2001 from Visa. They had a contest called Visa Hall of Fans Award, and they awarded this to one fan from every team for being their most passionate fan of the year. And they actually put your plaque in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, so that was kind of a big honor. And following that, a few years later, I just decided, well, it might be interesting for people to read about all these famous fans from across the country. And so I put together this book, Pro Football's Most Passionate Fans, and includes guys like Big Dog and the Hoggets from the Washington Redskins, the late Bell man from Denver, Mr. and Mrs. Seahawk from Seattle, all these other fans.
Yep.
And so it's basically just bios of all these fans and what made them such big. That was one book that I had published in 2012, and I'm very proud of that. And so I've written
Does every team have a big fan? Just racking my brain going, who's the 49ers' biggest fan? I was just literally was just trying to think of that. Nothing comes to mind.
Yeah, well, there was I can't remember their last name now, but Harry and Kitty, they were big fans. And what they did was they were season ticket holders, and they would allow visiting players that had no place to stay in their home. And so they won the award, this Visa award, for being the biggest fans of that year that they won. And they would just usually let incoming players stay there, anybody that needed a place to stay that was, players that needed a place to stay. Instead of going to a hotel, they would have them at their home. So they were real big fans out in San Francisco, and There's a couple others. I can't remember the other guy's name, but he had passed away a few years ago, but there was a big fan there. But, yeah, there's, for the most part, almost all 32 teams have somebody that has some public notoriety for being a big fan. I mean, Cleveland's got Big Dog, and I've met him. And
Barrel.
I was fortunate to meet Barrel Man. He's a great guy out in Denver, and I don't know if you guys are aware of him, but he would go to games with just a barrel and no clothes on underneath. Kind of funny. Every team has them. I mean, and the Hawkettes have since retired, so you won't see them anymore. The old Washington Redskin mascot with the guy that dressed up as an Indian, I spoke to him. So, yeah, there's quite a few.
That's pretty cool. So you compiled them, the results from the Visa contest. You compiled the results and put it all in one spot, all the fans.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they're just profiled. Okay. And the book is dedicated, actually, to Barrel Man because he had passed away by the time the book came out. And the front part is a foreword from his wife, Becky, and it's real nice touch to it. Basically, he became who he was because somebody dared him to go into the stadium with just a barrel on, and the Denver Broncos liked him so much, they let him come to every game free as long as he put the barrel on and marched around the stadium. So it's a great story, but it's something else.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I love
that. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Herb.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so I wrote for another site called Fanside Sports. There was one, the Sports Post, that I just wrote for a couple of years ago, and then, of course, Gridiron Greats. And then I got my start in high school. You know, I went to North Hills High School in Pittsburgh, wrote for their newspaper, the Travel Tribune. And then I graduated from Slippery Rock University of Pennsylvania, go Rock, and I wrote for their newspaper, the Rocket newspaper, the Rocket, and I was a sports writer there for them as well. As well as I used to do radio, that's originally was my original goal, was to get into radio broadcasting, but I was the sports director for Slippery Rock and called their football games, so that was pretty exciting. We had one guy that went to the NFL. His name was Ricky Porter, a running back. He was a friend of mine, and he was a running back, and he made it with the Detroit Lions for a little bit, but never really became a big star, but he was quite a good running back.
Wow. I remember you telling me that a few years back. That's pretty interesting. Do you have any collecting or writing experience or story you'd like to share with our audience that really stands out above them all, if any?
Well, I guess my shining honor is that Pro Football's most passionate fans. And, you know, it's done fairly well selling. I think a lot of the fans that were in the book bought a copy, gave it to their relatives and everything else. It kind of died down as far as sales go. You know, I met a lot of those people on a personal basis. And so it was, you know, an honor to meet all these people, most of them anyway, and get to know them and then, you know, have them write the bios for me. So it was a lot of my writing, but it was a lot of their input as well. And so the other thing would be, I guess, my Steelers hotline I used to have years ago was actually featured as a featured Steelers website in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
That's pretty good.
The interesting thing is that when he wrote
the web.
Huh? Go ahead.
No, I was saying if they're putting it out there as, you know, this is it. This is what we're considering. You know, this is what we're thrusting forward. Yeah, that's really good. That's very respectful, even for the Steelers.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. The day after that story came out, I was checking my paycheck, and I usually was getting about anywhere from 100 up to 200. And I looked the next day, and it was over 1,200. And I was like, what?
Oh, wow.
So I said, oh, that must be because of the articles. So, yeah, they helped.
And that's got to be tough, Harv. That's got to be tough because I assume a lot of it has to be done in, you know, like pictures and sketches because most Steeler fans are illiterate, I would imagine.
Yeah, I know we have that reputation.
I can just picture Joe walking into a Steelers-Seahawks game in Pittsburgh, and
it's interesting
seeing the ambulance come around very quickly on that one.
As far
Bob,
as
you know, my goal is to have a picture of me My goal is to have a picture of me in front of every NFL stadium wearing a Steve Largent jersey. And I got about eight of them down. I've been to some tough stadiums. I've heard from people that Philadelphia Eagles Stadium is the toughest. I've been there and had people buy me drinks. And you just have to go in with a sense of humor, have fun, and be prepared for about four or five insults. Some people are like, Steve Largent sucks. You're like, he's in the Hall of Fame, man. That's like saying Harold Carmichael sucks. You know, does Harold Carmichael suck? No, he doesn't. You know, I don't know. You just have to be prepared.
Well, I can tell you, I've been to games in Baltimore. I've been to games in New York for Giants and Jets. I'm now in Jacksonville. I've been to Steelers-Jacksonville games down here. And the only time I was in the stadium and was treated pretty good was with the New York Giants. Every other stadium, I got harassed, you know, big time for being a Steelers fan. But the Giants fans were the only ones who didn't say anything.
But what level of harassment? I mean, like, to me, people like, oh, you better watch your ass if you go to, you know, the Eagles stadium, you know. I've never been physically afraid. I've never had someone shove me. It's just, I'll take all the insults all day long and I'll laugh it off. I've never had someone get physical with me. So, I mean, when you say, you know, there's harassment and then there's downright physical. I've never had someone get physical with me, you know.
No,
I've had my verbal
scars, neither have I, but I can tell you one Jaguar game I went to, there was a Steelers fan there, and this Jaguar fan and him were jawing back and forth, and this guy actually shoved the Steelers' wife. And security came down and escorted the Jaguar fan out of the stadium. And I clearly remember saying to the security guy as he walked past me, he said, why are you throwing me out of my own stadium? He says, I'm doing this because if I leave you here, you're going to get killed. So, it can happen.
Wow. Yeah. Well,
you're right. I don't know. I just take the attitude we're all here. I don't know. I go to away games, and trust me, I'm not that Yahoo who stands up and applauses, you know, we score. I mean, I'm rooting for my team, but I also realize that I am an invited guest in someone else's stadium and to be respectful.
Mm-hmm.
That's my attitude. So, I don't know. That's a tangent, but I mean, went to a Bears game
going back
with Andy
to,
Becker. Did you? No, go for it, Art.
No, I was just going to say, going back to this whole Hall of Fame's visa thing, after I won the award, I was invited up to the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the induction ceremonies for regular players. And it turns out that they created a yearly gathering of all these fans at the Football Hall of Fame during the induction ceremonies. So I went up there two or three times for that, and I'll tell you, I had such a good time those weekends with these other fans because they all went in there with the attitude that we're all in this for the same thing. And we're all cheering for our teams. We all want our teams to win a Super Bowl. And everybody got along like they were best friends. And it was a really great feeling.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Bob?
Yeah.
That's mine.
Joe.
I'm sorry. I'm backwards.
Yeah, Joe. Read the script, Joe.
Every week, I tell Bob, I'm like, I've got the greatest seat in the house, and I literally tell people, it's like, just, if you get to sit around with the ambassador of football, Bob Swick, every couple of weeks and just talk football, isn't that kind of cool?
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes I just kind of put the script, down and just kind of sit there and talk. And every once in a while there's this silence and I forget it's my turn.
No, I'll tell you,
I'm sorry about that,
Art.
Okay.
It's been a great conversation because I love sports history. I love talking old school. Old school is the best. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, Bob and I get to see each other at the National. You know, we'll have dinner a couple times, and we'll sit at the BST booth, and we'll talk. But you know, Bob's there representing Gridiron Great, so a lot of times we're a little distracted when we're talking. So we get to catch up when we're on the podcast. But Harv, can you talk about your new podcast?
Yeah, I decided, given the broadcasting background I have and my wife's encouragement, I always said you should do a podcast. So I began a new one. It's just only a couple of weeks old, and I call it Talking Sports on Harvard Avenue. It's available. They, you know, listeners can catch it right at my website because it's right on the front page, but I have a page there that also lists other platforms that they can catch the show on that also host the show, and, of course, it's also on Blog Talk Radio. And I will do three broadcasts a week. Right now they're only 30-minute broadcasts, but I do three broadcasts a week. I will do one on Tuesday for to wrap up the Steelers' previous game. And on Thursday, then I'm going to talk about all other sports outside of football since I am a fan of all the sports. And Saturday, then I'll give a Steelers preview and then predictions for my games, the other NFL games coming up on Sunday. And then right now I'm not doing a live show just yet. I'm going to wait and see how the audience grows and then it possibly go live and have people call in. But right now they're like on a tape delay, so there's no set time. But I always put up on the site, you know, new podcasts available, something like that. And then anybody that's interested, I'm trying to create a mailing list, and then they can be updated properly. And there's a mailing list on the bottom of my website where they can sign up, or they can just email simply at my website email, which is theharvardavenue@gmail.com.
I love that nickname, by the way, Harv. That's just...
Say it again.
That wraps it up. That wraps it up. We're almost out of time. I appreciate you being on our podcast today. Some great memories, to say the least, and I wish you well on your new podcast. I'm sure it'll be very successful. And I thank you very much for all the hard work you put into the articles you write for GG. And again, this coming issue 62, which will be out roughly October 22nd, will be on Pittsburgh college football. It's a very great, very, very interesting and informative article on that area. So, Harv, thank you for being on. I appreciate it, and we'll be in touch soon.
I appreciate you having me. Have a great day.
Take it easy, Harv.
Again.
All right. Nice talking to you.
And again, as a reminder, we're sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website, msbsportscards.com, and by BST Auctions. Check out their website, their upcoming fall auction, bstauctions.com. 2-minute warning and wrap up. Joe, I'm going to hand it off to you. What did you learn on tonight's show?
You know, for a Steelers guy, Harv was pretty decent. You know, I've definitely got some, you know, prejudgments when it comes to Steelers people. I mean, but again, you blame me. John Spano's a Steeler guy, you know, and you and I have both talked about, you know, how John is a waste of oxygen. So it's just nice to see Harv.
I'm kidding, John. Wow.
Oh, Harv's still there. Oh, this just got awkward. No, just good guy. All joking aside, it is kind of funny, Bob. I make one mistake per show, don't I? And it's typically when we just go off script and we start talking about something. And next thing you know, it's my turn, and I'm just sitting here. It does crack me up. So.
Well, I'll tell you, I really believe that there are passionate fans. I've always said there's just passionate fans for college teams, passionate fans for NFL and AFL teams. You know, these are people who live their team day in and day out. They're the diehard fans. The team can go, you know, 6-10, and they're still out there rooting for their team, so on and so forth. And I just find it to be very interesting to talk to these different fans throughout the country with different teams. Harv, having a lot of experience in the media and in football history at the same time, really have a real deep background in Steelers history and the understanding of it and where they came from. And it's really a very positive part of the history of the game and the history of the memorabilia of the game at the same time. Because, the history of the game to me is much more exciting than the game being played on the field, which is amounting to being touch football right now in 2018. And it's just so sad to see what's happened. I mean, really.
It's just pathetic.
All right, we're down about 45 seconds. Joe, any other final thoughts?
Boy, watching the BST auction click away. Some early activity, a couple things I have my eye on. Every time you mention that, I think about the stuff I'm watching.
Incredible items, and I am truly fascinated with that
1894 mail set, and a lot of those Roger Peach cards, and then also the tobacco piece, which is the name of it. Yeah. Escapes me right
the
now.
The 63 Blair set,
incredible items there, so I suggest anybody's interested, make sure you check it out. Okay, we're out of time. We'll be back in a week with another show. Thanks for listening, and again, check out our website, GlitterAndGreatsMagazine.com.
Always an honor, Captain.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.